This kept the laity baffled by the nonsensical mysteries, confused, and dependent on the priests for information about the requirements for salvation. The priests consequently enjoyed a position of considerable power over the laity, which they strove to maintain and increase. Deists referred to this kind of manipulation of religious doctrine as priestcraft, a highly derogatory term. Deists saw their mission as the stripping away of priestcraft and mysteries from religion, thereby restoring religion to its original, true condition, simple and rational. In many cases, they considered true, original Christianity to be the same as this original natural religion. To the detriment of the congregation of believers of all of man's religions, the above position of the deists is correct. At its source, religions such as Christianity are pure and spiritual, but once these religions are placed in the hands of priests who, 1, lack the spiritual maturity to fully comprehend the purpose of the teachings from a spiritual perspective, 2, and they recognize the reality that the position of priest is a position of power and influence over others that often garners great wealth and political influence, both the original objectives and purpose of the religion, as well as the teachings themselves, very quickly become corrupted. Historically, the Reformation is a witness as to the absolute corruption of the Church that took place in the 4th century. But Martin Luther was himself a priest of the Church of Rome, and John Calvin was trained as a humanist lawyer, and neither one of these leaders of the Reformation had any understanding of the original spiritual essence and objectives of the core teachings of the way which, after being severely corrupted, came to be known as Christianity. From an historical perspective, the perfect example of the clergy of the 3rd century is that of Paul of Samosata, c., where Edward Gibbon writes in his The Decline and Fall of the Roman Empire that Paul may serve to illustrate the condition and character of the times. Paul considered the service of the church as a very lucrative profession. Against those who resisted his power or refused to flatter his vanity, the prelate of Antioch was arrogant, rigid, and inexorable. But he relaxed the discipline and lavished the treasures of the church on his dependent clergy, who were permitted to imitate their master in the gratification of every sensual appetite. For Paul indulged himself very freely in the pleasures of the table, and he had received into the episcopal palace 2 young and beautiful women as the constant companions of his leisure moments. Thus, Paul of Samosata, who Gibbon states is merely an example of the clergy who portrayed themselves as orthodox, corrupted the teachings as stated in the above position of the deists, that is, laymen were told by the priests that only the priests really knew what was necessary for salvation, and that laymen must accept the mysteries on faith and on the priest's authority. This kept the laity baffled by the nonsensical mysteries, confused, and dependent on the priests for information about the requirements for salvation. Just as important is the above statement that deists referred to this kind of manipulation of religious doctrine as priestcraft, a highly derogatory term. Deists saw their mission as the stripping away of priestcraft and mysteries from religion, thereby restoring religion to its original, true condition, simple and rational. In many cases, they considered true, original Christianity to be the same as this original natural religion, the original. Stripping away of pagan priestcraft is historically known as the Reformation. But herein lies the crux of the problem, that is, the leaders of the Reformation, such as Martin Luther, were themselves priests of the Roman Church, and they did not at all understand the original teachings which had been declared to be heresy by the Church of Rome. And in not understanding the spiritual meaning of the Scriptures, see an inconvenient truth, or the objectives of a pure spiritual religion, Martin Luther's ignorance became an anchor that further cloaked the church in an abyss of profound ignorance as to the meaning and objectives of the original gospel teachings. Further, any time a philosophy or theology is born out of a reaction to a condition of this world, and in this case, Martin Luther created a reactionary doctrine in response to the absolute corruption of the church as exemplified in his letter to Pope Leo X on September 6, 1520. Where Martin Luther wrote of the Christianity of his day, that the church, once the holiest of all, has become the most licentious den of thieves, the most shameless of all brothels, the kingdom of sin, death, and hell. It is so bad that even Antichrist himself, if he should come, could think of nothing to add to its wickedness, quoted in The Great Thoughts, compiled by George Sells.
Yet,
as predicted by the Apostle Paul, the Antichrist not only ruled the church since the 4th century, see Church of the Antichrist, but as Paul predicted, the Antichrist sat on the throne of the church and was worshipped as God. And with regard to Paul's assertion that these things would come to pass, the Adam Clark commentary writes of this passage of Paul's epistle, "Except there come a falling away first, we have the original word apostasia and our word apostasy, and by this term we understand a dereliction of the essential principles of religious truth, either a total abandonment of Christianity itself, or such a corruption of its doctrines as renders the whole system completely inefficient to salvation." But what this apostasy means is a question which has not yet, and perhaps never will be, answered to general satisfaction from the Adam Clark commentary. Martin Luther and the Protestant reformers who did not understand the original teachings and objectives of the way and thus could not comprehend the reality of the warning that what was left was a dereliction of the essential principles of religious truth, either a total abandonment of Christianity itself, or such a corruption of its doctrines as renders the whole system completely inefficient to salvation. And in many respects, they further alienated the Christian community from the original objectives of a spiritual religion, the tenets of which they did not at all understand. When rightfully understood, the scriptures, which had been thoroughly corrupted by the Church of Rome, remained a total enigma to the very carnal thinking of Martin Luther.
Why?
Because the scriptures were spiritual composed and written by spiritual men who understood what has come to be termed the laws of nature. And nature's God and Martin Luther was totally carnal in his thinking, and as Paul himself warned, the higher reality of the soul and the mysteries of the kingdom remained a total and inconceivable enigma, see mystery of the gospel, to the very limited awareness and thinking of Martin Luther and most of the leaders of the Reformation. And in not being able to justify and explain in rational sense the biblical doctrine of divine providence, where it is stated that all the events in the life of mankind have been predestined and scripted by the laws of God, Luther made the fatal error of condemning the use of reason. That is, reason, writes Luther, is the greatest enemy that faith has. It never comes to the aid of spiritual things, but, more frequently than not, struggles against the divine word, treating with contempt all that emanates from God, quoted in The Great Thoughts, compiled by George Sells. Why did Luther condemn the use of reason? Like a true politician, when confronted with a reality that revealed his ineptness and profound spiritual ignorance, Luther either avoided acknowledging the subject or portrayed it as heresy. And because the leaders of the Reformation, such as Luther and Calvin, could not even begin to answer the biblical dilemma that was set before them, they promoted what can only be called the doctrine of insane irrationality. What is this doctrine? While meekly admitting that the God they believe in and promote is that of a monster and madman, they also warn the Christian community that if they so much as question the insane irrationality with which God moves in his dealings with man, that they will be rejected by the madman God and condemned to eternal hellfire just for questioning God's irrationality. Reject even the use of the mind, proclaims Martin Luther and Calvin. Reason is the greatest enemy that faith has, writes Luther, because he is missing a primary piece of the gospel that is necessary to even begin to understand the essence of the concepts and spiritual objectives of what the Gospels and New Testament scriptures teach. And it is this dogmatic foundation of profound ignorance that resulted in the reality that it can be factually stated that the faith-based religion of the church, which has evolved out of the Reformation, has in fact been promoted under a self-imposed vow of ignorance. And when rational thinkers question the often irrationality and required suspension of reason that Luther championed, he condemned himself to the embodiment of spiritual ignorance, when he condemned the very gift of reason that separates man from the brute beasts of the earth. The result was that the image of God that the church painted in what came to be known as Calvinism, see the great paradox of free will, was nothing less than horrendous and even diabolical. And while the modern church has attempted to soften what the Bible states about predestination and divert attention away from what the scriptures actually state, the fact that the body of believers fail to understand the laws that bring about all events in this world has immersed the church itself in a sea of profound spiritual ignorance. The congregation of Christians who emerged out of the Reformation could be portrayed as mushroom believers in that, in rejecting even the use of the mind, they dwelt in dark ignorance, promoting man-made dogma that poisons the minds of the blind believers to the degree that they are rendered spiritually dysfunctional and impotent. And while the deists who formed the constitutional bedrock of our constitutional form of government understood the necessary process of restoring and vitalizing the teachings of Jesus to their original form, that is, deists saw their mission as the stripping away of priestcraft from religion, thereby restoring religion to its original, true condition, simple and rational. In many cases, they considered true, original Christianity to be the same as this original natural religion. See Wikipedia under deism. They also recognize that the alliance of church and state has the potential to inhibit the necessary spiritual growth and evolution that would manifest man's highest potential. The problem is that they did not envision a complacent body of believers who would embrace our modern hedonist cultural atheism that rules over the thinking and lives of the people. The necessary spiritual environment founded by American Gnostics, Martin Luther's doctrine of faith regardless of actions, is a total rejection of first gospel principles and the religion of Jesus. One of the core objectives that modern Christians are for the most part totally ignorant of today is the necessity of an environment that is essential to the practice of religion in accord with crucial gospel principles. The first order of business of the disciples in the book of Acts was to create and inaugurate spiritual communities that were absolutely necessary in order to bring about the higher gospel objectives. But since Luther totally negated those necessary higher gospel objectives with respect to the development and maturation of the believer, the church itself has lost its spiritual compass. With respect to the actions of the original disciples as presented in the book of Acts, the spiritual communities were to be set apart from the culture and people of this world to the degree that Paul commanded the Christians to have nothing to do with those who were unclean, that is, wherefore come out from among them, and be ye separate, saith the Lord, and touch not the unclean thing, and I will receive you. 2 Cor 6:17 KJV. To the degree that Paul commanded the community of believers not even to dine with sinners, that is, I wrote to you in my epistle not to keep company with sexually immoral people. But now I have written to you not to keep company with anyone named a brother who is sexually immoral, or covetous, or an idolater, or a reveler, or a drunkard, or an extortioner, not even to eat with such a person. 1 Cor 5:9-13 in KJ. The modern Christians who have been duped into embracing a Marxist interpretation of the gospel and the doctrine of collective salvation remain absolutely clueless to understand why the first Christians were required to live separate and apart in secluded communities that were segregated from the culture and lifestyle of their day. But that is because the dogmatic Christianity that has survived into the 21st century has little to nothing in common with the original teachings and objectives of the religion of the way. W-hat we are presented with here is a gospel disconnect of immense proportions that has totally undermined the modern church that coddles and even exemplifies every form of immorality and has, in effect, institutionalized sinful behavior. While it is true that Jesus and his disciples went out among the people and called them to repent sin no more and seek the kingdom, at no time did Jesus or his disciples suggest that the community of believers should live in the immoral manner of the multitudes of people or support their addictions and dependence upon intoxicating substances or to learn and be indoctrinated into the spiritual folly of their ways. Further, there is absolutely no suggestion that a parent should surrender their child and hand them over to the pseudo-teachers, counterfeit shepherds, and profane authorities of this world in order to be fully initiated into the spiritual apostasy that Jesus told people to repent from. To the man who Jesus healed, he warned, "Behold, thou art made whole. Sin no more, lest a worse thing come unto thee." John 5:14 KJV. And in not understanding the laws that were instituted by Creator God in the beginning that rule over the lives of men in this world, Christians remain totally ignorant of the words of Jesus that if a person sins, especially after coming to the knowledge of the way, that the laws will bring an even worse thing that will come unto thee, and that every Christian is obligated to raise their children up in the way, makes the modern Marxist dogma of collective salvation a total fraud. In the same way that the deists who understood that in its original form the religion of Jesus was the purest of all religions, that is, their mission is the stripping away of priestcraft from religion, thereby restoring religion to its original, true conditions, simple and rational. In many cases, they considered true, original Christianity to be the same as this original natural religion. They also understood that the partnership of church and state always brought about the total downfall and demise of the essential religious teachings that became replaced by irrational and often meaningless dogma. Prior to the Nicene takeover of the church by the pagan emperor Constantine in the 4th century, the wisest and most intelligent of men and women were the Christians who possessed the spiritual knowledge that provided them a higher understanding of the laws and the realities of this world that remains unknown even in modern times. And the core of the spiritual Christians possessed far greater knowledge than any of the pseudo-scholars who teach in our universities today. What happened? There was a segment of the church that had become paganized and morally bankrupt. See the example of Paul of Samosata. And these very pagan Christians entered into a covenant with the Emperor Constantine, and the church became ordained by pagan Rome. The result was that emperor dictated the acceptable doctrines of the church. The spiritual Christians were denounced and condemned as heretics who were hunted down and murdered. The most corrupted copies of the scriptures, see Bible corruption, were further rewritten in order to make them support the dogma of pagan Rome, and the higher spiritual knowledge that the church previously possessed became outlawed as heresy. Thus, when modern atheists such as Richard Dawkins portrays the Christian as ignorant, what he is unknowingly condemning is the government doctrines that were imposed upon the church. Men such as Richard Dawkins are not only absolutely clueless as to the nature and reality of the truth of the pre-Nicene Christian church, but their paradigm of thinking has totally alienated them from man's true higher reality. And what makes pseudo-intellectuals such as Richard Dawkins so dangerous to the welfare of the common people is the fact that the dogma of the church does not at all support man's higher powers of intellect and reason, because they are chained by what Paul portrayed as Jewish fables, Tit 1:14, which were intended to provoke intelligent men to question both the accounts, as well as the God these accounts portrayed, which means that men such as Richard Dawkins are free to promote intellectual poison, because the church has totally failed to promote its original primary objectives, one of which is the enlightenment of the congregation of believers. Is this the fault of the church? The spiritual core of Christianity remains virtually unknown today because of direct government intrusion into the affairs of the church with respect to acceptable doctrines of belief. In the same way that in China only those churches which are approved by the government are permitted, so too was the church that came into being in the 4th century under the direct control of the Roman emperors. That the segment of the church which called itself Orthodox was a mere puppet of pagan Rome and had little to nothing in common with the original teachings and objectives of Jesus and the Way should come as no surprise to the modern believer in view of the many statements of biblical scholars such as A. Powell Davis, who attempted to warn the Christian world that discoveries such as the Dead Sea Scrolls had confirmed what they had suspected and believed all along, that is, that the Emperor Constantine and the pagan Church of Rome created a religion of blind faith and belief, where he wrote that biblical scholars were not disturbed by what they found in the Dead Sea Scrolls, because they had known all along that the origin of Christianity was not what was commonly supposed to have been, quoted by Miller Burroughs and More Light, on the Dead Sea Scrolls. Thus, this long-ignored statement prompts us to ask, why didn't the biblical scholars understand the true origin of Christianity prior to the discovery and examination of the Dead Sea Scrolls? To answer this question, we must consult the findings of Prof. Elaine Pagels, who correctly writes, "It is the winners who write history, their way." No wonder, then, that the viewpoint of the successful majority has dominated all traditional accounts of the origin of Christianity. It suggests that these religious debates, questions of the nature of God or of Christ, simultaneously bear social and political implications that are crucial to the development of Christianity as an institutional religion. In simplest terms, ideas which bear implications contrary to that development come to be labeled as heresy. Ideas which implicitly support it become orthodox, see Pagels, the Gnostic Gospels. In not learning the lessons of history, modern believers have overlooked the fact that when despots rule, They not only annihilate all opposition, but they write history their way, and they corrupt and burn whatever writings stand in opposition to their supremacy and rule. Which means that those doctrines of belief that are seen as orthodox and promoted by the modern-day church today is drawn from the side of political implications that were crucial to the development of Christianity as an institutional religion under the direct control of pagan Rome. In the case of the Christian church beginning in the 4th century, to disagree with the doctrines affirmed by the Emperor Constantine carried with it the sentence of death. Thus, Edward Gibbon writes in The Decline and Fall of the Roman Empire, Constantine easily believed that the heretics, who presumed to dispute his opinions or to oppose his commands, were guilty of the most absurd and criminal obstinacy. Not a moment was lost in excluding the ministers and teachers of the separated congregations from any share of the rewards and immunities which the emperor had so liberally bestowed on the Orthodox clergy. But as the sectaries might still exist under the cloud of royal disgrace, the conquest of the East was immediately followed by an edict which announced their total destruction. Thus, in the same way that whoever did not embrace the religion of the emperor met with the sentence of death, whatever scriptures did not conform to the approved version was immediately destroyed. See. The term BC with respect to the beginning of our common era should be reevaluated to indicate before Constantine with respect to the birth of the Christ that is worshipped in the modern church and promoted by its secularized, orthodox dogma. That the modern-day Christ and the religion of the church were conceived and born under the dominion of the Roman Emperor Constantine, and that the dogma of the church was purely political, in contradistinction to the spiritual foundation of the original teachings, is demonstrated in the fact that modern Christianity has very little in common with the original objectives of the teachings of the way, which was to bring about the heightening and enlargement of human consciousness. See original gospel objectives, which has absolutely nothing in common with the blind faith dogmatized church that came into being in the 4th century under the rulership and doctrinal control of pagan Rome. But the fact that the modern Christians worship the satanic god of Constantine should come as no surprise, in view of the fact that the Apostle Paul predicted that the worship of the true God would cease, and those who called themselves Christian would instead worship Satan, see the Church of the Antichrist. That the objective of what Paul portrays as the god of this world is to keep the congregation of Christians ignorant and promoters of blind faith and the spurious doctrines of pagan Rome, has for the most part continued to inhibit the true spiritual rebirth of the church. And while pseudo-shepherds such as Martin Luther convinced the church to embrace the dogma of faith apart from actions to the degree that every tenet of the modern church is openly condemned in their own New Testament, see the lie and the 10-minute test, the modern believer continues to ignore the scriptures and their allegiance to the dogma of pagan Rome. And just as equally important to understand is that the heightening and enlargement of human consciousness has absolutely nothing to do with the expansion of the physical brain, but rather, both the refinement of the physical body that permits this expansion of mind to be brought about, and the development of those areas which lie under the control of the innate intuitive spheres of the mind that the physical brain does not naturally support. Throughout history, there have always been the few who rejected the folly of the church's self-imposed vow of ignorance, and with a dauntless heart sought the truth of the Spirit over the doctrines of men. Yet, in the past, anyone who knew the truth and even openly hinted at the truth were immediately turned upon as a demonic heretic by the church, often burnt at the stake for heresy. In the name of their God and gods, those who spoke the truth were condemned as a disease to humanity that needed to be eradicated before it. They could infect the thinking of other people. And sadly, the church has continued down this road of self-imposed ignorance even to this very day. To the mind of the true believer, such things as facts and rational thought are simply not part of the equation. In contradistinction to the blind static faith of the common believer, Paul's faith was based upon sure knowledge and spiritual experiences of incomprehensible mysteries that would totally confuse the modern believer, who must rely solely upon blind faith in the unknown. And while this fact is easily demonstrated using the Bible itself, because the readers of the written word are themselves blind to its true meaning, they simply skip over these crucial warnings as if they do not exist. The result is that they put their faith in rhetoric and the doctrines of men, which doctrines become their own limitation, and they never move on to maturity and wholeness, and perfect their faith in the manner that Paul commanded. In the same way that the parable of the sower and the seed demonstrates the necessary environment for the living word to grow and evolve within the individual, see sower and seed. The body of spiritual Gnostics who were called deists understood why the gospel requires segregation from the culture and lifestyle of the people of this world. See above necessary spiritual environment. In understanding the laws and the complexity of higher thought that man in his organic and carnal condition could not even begin to grasp, the original spiritual Americans created the necessary constitutional environment that would permit the laws of nature and nature's God to give birth and bring about higher consciousness. And when rightfully understood, American spirituality was inaugurated and protected itself by inhibiting the state from not only embracing a particular religion, but also stopping the state from interfering with the practice of religion. As ruled upon by the Supreme Court, the very purpose of a Bill of Rights was to withdraw certain subjects from the vicissitudes of political controversy, to place them beyond the reach of majorities and officials, and to establish them as legal principles to be applied by the courts. West Virginia State Board of Education versus Burnett, 319 U.S. 624, 638, 1943. And when rightly understood, the primary reason was to protect the spiritual environment that was created by our constitutional framework from the infringement of both church and state, and to protect the birth of American spirituality from the assault upon essential Gnostic principles that had immersed mankind in ignorance throughout his historical past. Thus, more than anything else, our constitutional framers, who were portrayed as deists, created the necessary environment that had the capacity to give birth to and nurture the heightening and enlargement of human consciousness, which was a core objective of the original gospel teachings of Jesus and the Way. As explained throughout the foregoing, the Greek word for spiritual knowledge received through revelation directly from God is called gnosis. See the reality of gnosis. But in not wanting to use this word that the church condemned as heresy, those who opposed the folly of Luther and his suspension of the God-given gift of reason instead called themselves deists. And thus, herein lies the paradox that neither the church or the modern neo-deists can even begin to come to terms with. That is, in order for the position of the deists to be correct, they must have themselves been able to tap into a source of higher knowledge and wisdom, which they did, and it is for this reason that I correctly portray them as the original American Gnostics. Why Gnostics? Because when the meaning of the word gnosis is truly understood, is as representative of one of those words which cannot be redefined by carnal men, and the word itself portrays spiritual knowledge derived directly from the source of all knowledge, see gnosis, the gaining of which is often portrayed as the divine manna of the kingdom, is indeed one of the primary objectives of a spiritual religion. But these original primary objectives are very quickly corrupted by carnally minded priests who alter the original teachings in order to place themselves in a position of authority over the congregation of faith-based believers. In opposition to the directive of the gospel account of Jesus, his followers were ordered not to be called teacher or leader because, as lost prodigal sons, all of mankind are equally brothers who have one heavenly Father. Deists are said to revere what is called natural religion versus revealed religion. But what is natural religion? Which further raises the question, do modern neo-deists even understand the proper application of the scriptures, and what is the true meaning of what they term a revealed religion? What the original deists said is that if you begin to understand what they portrayed was the laws of nature, that the higher reality of nature's God will begin to be revealed to you. And, when rightly understood, this is the exact message of Paul, who wrote, "Because that which is known about God, for God made it evident to them. For since the creation of the world, his invisible attributes, his eternal power and divine nature, have been clearly seen, being understood through what has been made, so that they are without excuse." Rom 1:19-20 NAS. And if we ask why and how can God be understood through the attributes of creation and the laws of nature? Because there is a divine pattern that all of creation is holographically imprinted with the spiritual DNA of its creator. And if you understand the pattern that the laws of God imbued into all that exists, You will then begin to perceive and comprehend the source that brought forth the ALL that exists, where the priest who promotes priestcraft corrupts the original teachings and then seduces the believers into accepting his authority by promoting blind belief and faith in the dogma of carnal men. A true Gnostic who builds upon the proper mindset and lifestyle is able to develop his innate, God-given abilities to gain access to the source of all truth and knowledge. Thus, if as Jesus taught that the kingdom is within us, why not make the journey in the way and learn directly from the source? And having themselves tapped into the source, the deists, or American Gnostics, influenced the framers of our constitutional form of government to create an environment that would enable man to aspire to a higher potential. I am writing the following on the objectives and accomplishments of the American deists/Gnostics, because it is impossible to evolve the mind beyond the organic, physical, carnal level of nature man without first understanding 1. Both the laws, 2. And the manner in which the laws evolve the mind of man to overcome the natural physical barrier of earth consciousness, 3. With the objective being to enable the seeker/disciple to begin to tap into man's higher soul and spiritual reality that his physical senses are oblivious to. Table of Contents hyperlinks to Deism subjects Deism and the First Amendment, the Prodigal Son, and the theist/deist perception of creation necessary spiritual environment created by American Gnostics, the Law of Octaves and Brief Limits of the Organic Mind, Linear Thought Religion as a System of Education, Spiritual Religion, Entry-Level Deism, Deism, the Laws, and the Two Creation Accounts in Genesis, the Allegorical Fall of Man, the Spiritual Sabbath that man does not understand the law received from angels, the Two Creation Accounts deists believed in the pre-existent soul that evolves to perfection over many lifetimes, the holographic pattern of the 12 within the One, the Enigma of the 12, the Laws, and the Tree of Life deists, and the homogenization factor, the foundational laws of the United States segregated harmonic interaction deism and the First Amendment. While the deists were responsible for laying the constitutional foundation that Americans today have inherited, these same Americans neither understand the deists, nor do they understand the full potential that the Constitution has the inherent power to bring about in the lives of mankind. And from both a secular and religious perspective, this ignorance with respect to the deists is the most dangerous force in the world today. Why? Because many of the core deists not only possessed a comprehension of the laws which control all aspects of the life that all people live, but just as important is the fact that some of the deists possessed the body of esoteric knowledge that the church threw away when it entered into a covenant relationship with pagan Rome. An abiding reality is that all of creation and life is built upon a foundation of immutable laws, and success is often the result of man's endeavor to build upon this foundation of laws a structure which ensures his success. While the law of gravity is an example of an immutable law which not only holds man to the surface of the earth, but also is part of the equation that holds the earth in a rotation around the sun, by understanding the law of gravity, man can devise various means to escape its limitations. Moreover, in the case of space travel, man can harness the very force of gravity as a means of propulsion. When man made the journey to the moon, he used the rocket's propulsion to break free of the Earth's gravity, and then the moon's gravity to draw him in that direction.